Good morning, this is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is July the 20th, 2020. One more of my ongoing series of podcasts about things of interest in the world of global mobility, citizenship, etc. And today I am very pleased to have joining me Ronan McCrae, who is a professor of constitutional and European law at the Faculty of Laws, University College London. Was originally from Ireland, and the reason that I have asked him to join me today is because of a fascinating article that was published in the Irish Times last week, where he was talking about how citizenship, how the meaning of citizenship has perhaps changed, and how the whole COVID-19 thing might result in a possible rethinking of at least Irish citizenship, and perhaps more. So, Ronan, thank you very much for joining me. How are you today?
I'm fine, thanks. Yes, well, struggling through lockdown like everybody else, or a semi-lockdown, but I'm fine. Thanks.
And I understand that you actually are in Ireland today.
I am.
Which is a safer place, perhaps, in the COVID-19 world.
Yeah, London hasn't been great, but yeah.
All right. You know, I really like your article. Obviously, I'm interested in citizenship generally, but to kind of get this started, at a bare minimum, anybody who was reading your article would learn a little bit about differing ways that people can acquire citizenship. And I wonder if you'd comment on that, perhaps first in a general sense, and then specifically in the context of Irish citizenship.
All right. So, you know, there are a number of ways that you acquire citizenship. The kind of main ones are normally through either like birth or residence in a place, or, you know, or you can get it through descent, through your family. And Irish citizenship is notable for being quite generous on the descent element. So it's stricter on Ireland. Doesn't, if you wish to get Irish citizenship, to residence, you have to live for 5 years and go through a fairly lengthy process. Or if you get to marriage, it's for 3 years, and you must live in the country and go through a long process. But if you want to get it through descent, through your ancestors, it is enough to have one Irish grandparent. Effectively, the rule is that your parent must have been an Irish citizen at the time of your birth. But if your parent had an Irish parent themselves, they're considered to be automatically fulfill that criteria. So effectively, you only need to have one Irish grandparent in order to get Irish citizenship. And internationally, like comparatively, that is a very generous approach. So for instance, in the UK, you can get citizenship to your parents, and it dies out after one generation unless that parent in question or lives in the UK for a period of time. So Ireland is gives citizenship by descent on a very kind of broad basis. Now, because of Irish history, because so many people left Ireland to go to live to places like Canada, the US, and the UK, the effect of that is that the amount of people entitled to Irish citizenship is actually much bigger than the current population of Ireland. And that's very unusual in international terms. And my article also raises the issue, two issues about it. One, I'm not sure if that's fair, because it's a very blood-based notion of citizenship. So it makes it much easier if you are of kind of, quotes, Irish blood, of an Irish grandparent, it's easy to get citizenship. If you are someone, we have a lot of cases in Ireland of children born to parents without legal migration status who spend their whole lives in Ireland, and who can't get citizenship. So see, it doesn't sit well with me that we put so much emphasis on blood. It's kind of a, you know, some people would criticize it as a very racial view of citizenship. The other issue is just a matter of prudence, that we've seen this year, the world is so much more unpredictable than we thought. And in the COVID crisis, we've seen that, you know, borders really matter. Even within the EU, people have been closing borders to everyone except their citizens. And in that context, you have to wonder, is it very wise for Ireland to have, in a very unpredictable world, a policy that gives many times the population of the state, the Irish state, the right to full citizenship, no questions asked. Because a lot of places, they have links where they you can get citizenship. You have links through ancestry. You can come to the UK, work for a number of years if you have a British grandparent, maybe later get citizenship. But in Ireland, that citizenship is given up front. And I think that undermines citizenship, treats it kind of cavalierly, and it may not be wise in to give unqualified right to citizenship to so many people.
Well, and you know, I can certainly see your point. I mean, I think that inferring from what you're saying is that in certain respects, you think that it kind of trivializes citizenship. Have I got that right? You know, makes it more of a ceremonial thing than a substantive thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you think for naturalization in Ireland, you have to go through a very lengthy process, go through your ceremonies, you have to prove that you've been a good citizen to get a good member of society to get citizenship. Whereas if you have just have an Irish grandparent, no, it's kind of almost no questions asked. The other thing is, you know, especially in Europe, where we have very extensive welfare states, where being a citizen also means you have an entitlement to be looked after by your fellow citizens if you get sick, if you're unemployed. Now, that citizenship needs a strong, those welfare states need to have a strong common bond between citizens, that they're willing to pay for each other if they get sick, if they get unemployed. And that's not consistent with giving citizenship simply on the basis of having one grandparent. I mean, on the current system, you don't even need to be able to find Ireland on a map. You don't need to have ever been to it. It's the mere fact of a blood connection. And I think blood connection is as part of citizenship entitlement is okay. I mean, parents, I think, generally should be able to pass their citizenship on. But one grandparent, the grandparent can even have died before you were born, and you still have the entitlement to Irish citizenship. That, I think, trivializes.
That is extraordinary. That is extraordinary. Can I ask you, you know, I appreciate, you know, we're talking about the grandparent connection. But, I mean, I don't know the answer to this, but I would imagine that somebody born to an Irish citizen living abroad would also qualify to be an Irish citizen, correct?
Yeah, you have to register. There's a thing you have to register on the Register of Foreign Births, and once you're put on that, yes. If your parent is Irish and you're put on the Register of Foreign Births, you're an Irish citizen.
So now these types of, so that would also be a citizenship by descent, I suppose. But citizenship, people who have the right to Irish citizens through descent, they don't have the obligation to take it, do they? In other words, if they didn't register. So it's really, so it's an option that doesn't have to be exercised.
That's right. Yeah. You don't have to. And it won't be the case like with American citizenship where it pursues you around the world in terms of taxation or anything like that. It's an option, not imposed on you.
Very, very interesting.
Because there were cases in Australia, I think, of people with unwanted foreign citizenships who are therefore suddenly disqualified from being politicians. But that wouldn't happen with the
Irish. Oh, yeah, that's exactly right.
But the interesting is because I've had some angry correspondence from Irish Americans about this issue and saying it's not fair and they should be entitled to Irish citizenship. But like America does not give citizenship on the basis of a grandparent. So I had less sympathy for complaints that Irish Americans should be entitled to Irish citizenship on the basis of a grandparent, because if I had an American grandparent, I wouldn't get American citizenship on that basis.
Right. Well, I mean, are they complaining based on anything reasonable, or are they just saying, you know, hey, we don't like this and we want as many options? I mean, I can certainly understand that we don't like this, we want as many options. But, I mean, is there any principled argument
one or two of them said, look, I'm very connected to Ireland. I know a lot about it. And I have sympathy with that. And I think that's a relationship that you could nurture. But you can nurture it in other ways. Because a lot of countries have schemes where if you have descendants from that country, you can come and work for a while, build up the connection, then later become a citizen. The UK has that. But what's unusual with the Irish scheme is that you don't have to do any of that. You get citizenship up front. So I am sympathetic to saying I have Irish grandparents. I'm very interested in Ireland. I'd love to come and live there and work there for a bit. And I think there should be a scheme for that. What I'm not in favor of is granting full citizenship straight off on that basis to everyone indiscriminately, those who are interested in Ireland, those who have been and visited, but also granting it to people who, I said, would have to struggle to find it on a map and who don't care, but just for instrumental reasons want the citizenship and can get it. I mean, there's been an awful lot of, there's an interesting, I don't know how much your listeners know about Brexit, but the UK leaving the EU, but there's been a rush of British people with Irish grandparents seeking Irish passports when Britain leaves the EU in order to maintain their EU citizenship. And there was a protest rally for people against Brexit with someone holding a sign that said, "I was born British, don't make me become Irish." I saw an Irish journalist saw that and said, "God, are we sure we're giving away the citizenship at the right value here? Is this seems to be, the fact that people could have no interest really in Ireland and don't want to be Irish at all, but we're going to let them become Irish because they had one grandparent or instrumentally to save themselves from the consequences of Brexit. That doesn't sit so well.
Well, it's, for anybody who actually thinks about this, and I suspect very few do it, this is interesting, but it also has enormous implications. Let me ask you this. So going back to your back and forth with the people who are upset, I have a lot of interest in Ireland. I love Ireland. I should be able to have citizenship because my grandparent was a citizen. What would your thoughts be on, say, how about a middle ground? How about a right to a temporary residence where you can nurture these connections or something? What would your thoughts be on something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the UK is that, where you basically can come on extended working holiday visa where you get the right to come work for a number of years. And I think they've extended recently in the UK. So now you can actually get up to 5 years. And if you work for 5 years in the UK, you can then apply for citizenship. So they actually have an increasingly generous path for people with British grandparents. But I think that would be fine, because that would in some ways filter out the kind of purely instrumental people who don't really have any significant connection to Ireland.
Just want another passport.
Yeah, and if you're interested enough and you come and you work and you build up a genuine connection with the society, then you have much of a stronger case to say I should be recognized as a citizen. But citizenship, one of the things we're realizing is citizenship is really important, both its rights and its duties, because democratic systems are based on self-government by citizens. It's based on citizens being kind of not just voting in their own interest, but being engaged and voting kind of for the good of the country.
They're part of a collective mission, so to speak.
Yeah, there has to be a we, we the people needs a sense of we. And, there's a famous liberal theorist, Jürgen Habermas, who says, there is no inclusion without some degree of exclusion. So you need to have a boundary on what the we is. And, citizenship is that boundary. And if we treat citizenship so cavalierly, it doesn't help us create a kind of politics and where the citizenship is engaged and feels a real connection. So as I mentioned also in the European context, social welfare systems really make citizenship a very valuable tool. So I think our democracy, our society, our welfare state, they all depend on citizenship, and we need to treat citizenship as the very important thing that it is. And we don't do that if we allow people with very, very limited connections to societies to be considered full citizens. And then in the Irish case, it's also just a numbers issue. The population of the Republic of Ireland is less than 5 million people, whereas the amount of people entitled in the US and UK to Irish citizenship is many times that. So it's quite, Ireland designed its citizenship laws. The last really, that rule came in first in the 1950s, when Ireland was a very poor country and when nobody really considered that there was any possibility that a lot of people would ever want to make use of the right to become an Irish citizen. The British comedian Spike Milligan sought to become Irish, and he said when he applied to the embassy in London, they said, "Oh, wonderful, we're very short of people, that's great." and and you know, but nobody could ever consider in the 50s that there'd ever be a lot of Americans who'd want to go and live in Ireland. Why would they? Ireland is now one of the richest countries in the world. I think it's number two or number three in the UN Development Index. And if you look at most very wealthy small countries in the world, like Singapore and places like that, they are very careful about who they give citizenship to. And I think Ireland, I think often when you change from being a poor country to a rich country or some other kind of change in your identity, there's a time lag in how you perceive yourself. And, you know, Irish people haven't really internalized the fact that this is now one of the richest countries in the world.
And one of the premier citizenships in the world.
We're used to, I think Irish people spent decades thinking themselves as, oh, well, we're from this kind of slightly backward, underdeveloped country, and we tend to emigrate, not have immigration. And that there's a time lag as people's perception changes. And they don't really realize being Irish is actually, they're very lucky to be economically and politically to be Irish. It's a very wealthy, small, stable country. And because the rules were designed when that wasn't the case, the COVID crisis teaches more generally that the world is not a very predictable place. We could, who would have thought this time last year that the US-Canada border would be closed for months? You know? The world is very unpredictable. It's not very prudent to have a citizenship policy that allows many times your current population the right of full citizenship. I mean, if France had a comparable policy to Ireland, they'd, you know, on a numbers terms, they'd be letting, you know, 400 or 500 million people have French citizenship. They would never do that. They think this is too much of a risk. And for Ireland, a country, a state of less than 5 million people, to be allowing, they think it's at least 10% of the British population, so that's nearly 7 million, and many times that, more times that in the US, to allow, you know, tens of millions citizenship of that country just isn't very wise. We don't know what the world is going to be like. Even, I think I mentioned the article, if 1% of the US population decides to move, so if 1% of the Irish population decides to move to America, no one would notice. 1% of 4.8 million. No one knows, to a country of 320 million. But if 1% of the US population moved to Ireland, they'd be nearly half the population. So, you know, it's the numbers makes Ireland a little bit more vulnerable in that regard.
Well, and then there's the issue of dual citizenship. So let's imagine that we, you know, have, I mean, what you're describing is a situation where there are more Irish citizens living in the United States, or at least potentially, than live in Ireland. There are more British citizens living in, say, London, or, you know, than perhaps in Ireland. So, I mean, let's imagine a situation. I mean, this may be far-fetched, or maybe not. I don't know. But, I mean, the U.S. likes to use its citizens as instruments of foreign policy. They wake up one day and say, well, you know, we're going to send an occupying army to Ireland. All Irish citizens come forward.
Yeah, well, one of the interesting things actually is that Irish, most countries, when you leave, you're living a citizen abroad, you get to vote in elections for quite a period of time. In Ireland, they cut it off almost immediately. I think 18 months after you leave, you lose your vote, because otherwise the electorate outside the state could exceed the electorate within the state. And you'd have people who live in Ireland being represented by a parliament elected.
Right. It's absolutely incredible. You put it that way.
Because the citizenship rules are so broad, they end up actually being very, very kind of narrow and ungenerous in what they give to non-resident citizens. And Irish people, I mean, people that say, for instance, like me, who've lived largely outside Ireland for the last 20 years, a lot of people in my situation, I actually don't believe this, but a lot of people in my situation complain that we can't vote, we get very few rights. And the answer to that is, well, yeah, but that's actually because there's just too many citizens outside the borders of the state. It's not possible to do it any other way. I also think, in general, there's a problem because Ireland, unlike the US, does not charge taxation to its citizens worldwide. If citizens abroad vote, then it's representation without taxation, which is not fair, but that's a separate issue.
Well, I think is absolutely, it's absolutely fascinating. On the issue of the voting abroad, now we've had this issue rear its head in Canada. in the last few years, where, I mean, it started out under Canadian election laws that there was a cutoff point, and Canadian citizens living outside Canada were disentitled from voting. A number of them brought a legal case based on the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and actually won. So interestingly, Canadian expats, if I'm understanding this correctly, do have a right to vote in Canadian elections. And I think that is, I mean, I think it's absurd. You know, I really do. I think that, you know, for the most part, voting has to do with, you know, how people live in the country, right? And you can't have.
Well, it's pretty like, because they might say, let's raise, one party raises income tax by 20%. And the people outside go, yeah, God, I don't have to pay it. Sure, knock yourselves out. You know, they don't actually have to live with the consequences of the decision that they pass. You know, and you think Canadian elections, a lot of things about the Canadian health system, taxation. People living outside the country are not as directly affected by that. So I agree with you. I think that, you know, if you're temporarily absent for a year or two, sure. But, you know, the idea that you could be long-term resident outside the country and yet still voting for a parliament whose decisions won't really affect you just doesn't seem like a great idea to me.
Well, I think the way you put it provides the basis for framing the issue properly. But, you know, Ireland is really, really proud of its immigrants. In fact, one of the most interesting places I've ever been in my life, I was actually in Dublin, that Museum of Emigration. I don't know what it's called, but you've been there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fantastic. You know, you go in this thing, you spend a day, and, you know, basically Ireland is celebrating its immigrants, you know, talking about this person, that person, you know, President Reagan, you know, all these people with Irish roots. And, you know, I suppose to some extent that's, you know, a recognition of the large number of immigrants, and a very large number of those, I guess, would be entitled to citizenship.
I mean, absolutely. And, I mean, Ireland is the only country, I think, certainly in Western Europe, where the population was higher in the mid-19th century than it is now. So, you know, in 1841, Ireland had near over 8 million inhabitants. And by 1960, it was down to, I think, 4.5. Whereas in the comparable period, most other countries in Europe, their population had skyrocketed. So the decline in population over that period, I mean, we still have a lower population than we did in 1841, which is, I think, we're the only country in Europe that that's the case for. So it shows there's a huge, emigration is a huge part of Ireland's national story. And absolutely, that's something that we should nurture and honor. You know, Irish America is a big, important link for us. St. Patrick's Day in the White House is a big issue, big date in the Irish political calendar. That's all something that we should nurture and honor, but not by giving full citizenship indiscriminately to anybody with a grandparent. I think there are much better, more targeted, fairer ways to do it. And, you know, most countries, even in Germany, to some degree, they have moved away from a blood-based version of citizenship. You know, whereas in Germany, they had a similar thing where there were Germans who were part of the German communities that went off to live on the River Volga in Russia 200 years ago and couldn't speak German and anything like that. But, you know, when they were entitled to full citizenship and all moved over to Germany when the wall came down, the Berlin Wall. You know, so that, but even Germany's moved away from that purely blood-based notion. And I just think in this context in Ireland, where we're now a country of immigration, where you make it difficult for people, hugely difficult, but we make it reasonably difficult for some people to be citizenship or living here, to be then so cavalier about giving it to people who may never have placed a foot on the island, just seems a little bit, seems unfair to me.
It's like a theoretical time warp or something, right? You know, it may have made sense many years ago, but this is one of the problems with citizenship. You know, it's sort of, there's very little thinking about, you know, what should be the link between an individual and citizenship. And I think it's starting a little bit because of all the, you know, the citizenship by investment programs out there. And I think Ireland, you know, does have something like that. But what those are about, what it's really about is a debate about, you know, what kind of connection should somebody have to a country in order to get citizenship.
And actually across the EU, so the European Union, the European Commission has been investigating schemes in Malta and Cyprus where they're effectively saying people are buying citizenship. There's a really interesting debate actually also in a lot of countries now about whether people seeking to become citizens should have to sign up to liberal democratic values. So in France, that's often a long time been part of the immigration law, that if you don't, they turn down people for citizenship on the basis that if you don't believe in the equality of men and women, or you don't believe in democracy or a separation of religion and state, they say no citizenship for you. So there's a big, in Europe now at the moment, ideology, whether it's legitimate to make ideology a part of citizenship acquisition is a big debate too. So there's loads of interesting things happening on that front.
Well, 20 years ago, I mean, you know, there were so few references to citizenship 20, 25 years ago that every time I saw one in a newspaper, I would actually clip it, right? Mm. I mean, this is, you know, so interesting. You know, at the time, one of the things I was doing was helping U.S. citizens retain U.S. citizenship when they were being, I believe, unlawfully stripped of U.S. citizenship for having become a citizen, you know, this sort of stuff, right? But there was almost no interest in it, and there was all, it was, you know, it was circumstance, like brown eyes, blue eyes type of thing, right? But now, you know, sort of the combination of current events, the citizenship by investment programs, the whole tax issue, you know, citizenship has become, I think, one of the most interesting things about people in the 21st century. And you know, there are plenty of people who sort of market their services based on the, you know, premise of increasing one's citizenship portfolio and that yeah. sort of thing. So it's really gotten interesting, while at the same time, you know, so few people, you know, even understand, you know, the mechanics of this stuff. Mm. But what would you do, right, if you could say we could have the Ronan McRae decree for Irish citizenship? Ah, yeah, good idea. Well, how would you thread the needle with this? Actually, before you do that, let me ask you another question. I think this is fairly obvious, but it'd be worth a bit of commentary. Do you think that the whole COVID-19 thing has, one, heightened the debate on citizenship, and two, I think, forced some changes down the road?
So first, yes. I think the changes are likely to be long-term. But if you think, one of the lessons of the COVID problems we've had are that the world is just much less predictable than we thought. That these kind of what they call black swan events, unanticipated, very frightening changes can suddenly come without us. And that makes people risk averse. So I think we had lots of assumptions that the future was definitely characterized by greater globalization, more movement of people and goods and things across borders. That's really been shaken by this. And you even see, the French president Emmanuel Macron saying, gosh, you know, Europe needs to look at just-in-time supply chains. We need to make sure we're self-sufficient in certain things. So people become more risk-averse. The world has become a more frightening and less predictable place. Second lesson was when the chips were down, citizenship became suddenly very important. Lots of countries closed their borders to all but their own citizens. And that was even within the European Union, where we have one of the basic principles of European Union law is free movement of citizens, absolute freedom to enter and move within the European Union. But under pressure, when the virus spread, people closed their borders to non-citizens. So I think citizenship has become very important. People get more risk averse. Now, in terms of then what that would lead to for citizenship, well, there's one thing, predicting it and then also saying what you'd like. So in terms of what, if I could issue my own decree, I would allow parents to pass on their citizenship. I would probably follow the model of the UK beyond that, where if you wish to pass by grandparents, it would have to be the case that your parents spent an amount of time living in Ireland. So you could get it directly if your parent is Irish. You can only get it from your grandparents if your Irish citizen parent who got their their nationality by descent had spent a significant amount of time in Ireland. I would generally cut it off at the parent level, but I would probably have a scheme where you could have some kind of working holiday visa, where if you have an Irish grandparent, you're able to come work in Ireland for a couple of years, build up a relationship with the country, and then perhaps down the road apply for citizenship. But I would cut off the you do that through normal naturalization process, not through entitlement. And the naturalization process would then probably involve, you know, the usual tests. And I think probably in the future, adherence to, this is a separate issue really, but adherence to liberal democratic values may also be part of that test, but that's probably a separate issue. But yeah, in my decree, I would cut it off at parents with a scheme to allow people, grandparents, the opportunity to nurture a relationship with Ireland rather than giving them citizenship straight off.
Well, that sounds entirely rational. Do you think that if this is not attended to generally, do you foresee sort of a crisis of citizenship unfolding at some point?
I think debate about what citizenship is and what it entails, and the fact that it involves duties as well as rights, I think is one of the key issues for democracy, because one of the real issues I tend to think is that democracy is only works on the basis of an engaged citizenry, and it can't be that citizens just vote for their own interests. We have to have an idea of a collective that we vote and we're committed to, and we vote in the interest of our society. And one of the things I do think is a real problem is the tendency in democracies now to treat voters as consumers who are always right, rather than citizens who have the duty to inform themselves. So, you know, when we say politicians openly lying or not even caring about being seen as lying, and then people vote for them anyway, I think that's a failure of the politician, but I think it's a failure of citizenship too. If democracies are going to work, citizens have to take their duties as citizens really carefully, really seriously. They should inform themselves and vote on that basis. And you know, often we always, I know in Ireland too, you often hear on the radio, oh, these politicians lied to the voters, and the voters are angry, and they're waiting for them in the long grass. They're going to get them at the next election. And I always think, well, if you were lied to, were you lied to in a way that actually you really believed you were being told, or did you do your due diligence? Did you question the claims being made to you? And I think citizens have to do that. Citizens need to be self-critical rather than view themselves as passive consumers. And the final thing is, if we're going to have welfare states where you look after each other and agree that if you're all Canadian and we'll pay for each other's healthcare, or all Irish will pay for you if you get unemployed, then we're going to have to be certain that we take citizenship seriously, because it's not an approach that treats citizenship very cavalierly and gives it to large numbers of people is not consistent with a view of citizenship that involves a tight bond and mutual duties to each other. So they're the two things.
That was fantastic. And, you know, you raise a lot of questions, so many with that, including, you know, what processes or whatever need to be put in place to have an enlightened, engaged citizenry. I'd like to propose that we do that in a separate podcast. Are you up for that?
Yeah, sure.
That'd be great. And we'll call it for today. And this has been really, really interesting. Thank you for joining me. And again, this is Professor Ronan McRae. And what I'm going to do, I discovered him. I found out that a lot of people who follow me on Twitter also follow you after I followed you, I know some of these people, which is quite interesting. Which is neither here nor there, but it's interesting how all these people seem to have, you know, at least that connection. You can find, if you were to Google irishtimes.com and Ronan McRae, you'd find a series of articles, but I'll post them because I thought they were very, very interesting. And, you know, until next time, let's pick it up right at this point. Thank you very much.
That was great.
Okay. Have a good day.